Hey guys, I'm Tim.
I'm Bob.
I'm Spencer.
And I'm Dan.
And this is the Board Game Rundown. Today we have got games we played, news, crowdfunding, and an interview with a designer of a game that I just got and I like playing. That's Cameron Duker from Redline.
I was about to say, you worded it like it was a secret, and then it instantly came out.
I just want to see if people are paying attention.
Right. Not.
That's all.
Well, and new development, you have a voice.
Yeah, sort of. It's still, it comes and goes a little bit, but it's back more than it was when we did Descent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was terrible.
Yep.
But yeah, anyways, we do have a Descent unboxing. If you want to be surprised like Dan and I were when we opened up that big old box. Where was that? Oh, there it is. I'm not going to spoil anything about it here.
But, no, I'm just kidding.
But, Redline. No, just kidding. So we got to do our normal housekeeping. So as you know, right now we've got a subscription drive. We're trying to get to 500 subscribers. And we did.
Thank you, everyone who supported us. Please don't leave now.
Right. Yeah. Really, it's been a lot of fun. It's been kind of like checking all the time. You know, like, please let us get there.
Yeah.
We are constantly, this isn't just like a let's get to 500 because that'll be cool. Like, we are constantly trying to improve this show. There's going to be some drastic changes coming in the next couple
very
months.
Soon.
Improvement wise. And, you know, you guys showing that you're supporting us while we do this is incredible because this is just something we do for fun currently. There are benefits, of course, like interviewing game designers. Honestly, I feel like if you guys reached out hard enough, you might be able to, too, just, you know, get on the right forums and everything. But you know, there are some benefits, but we do this because we love doing it, and having you guys show us support like that and reaching 500 with you guys and then having the comments you guys gave us with your support, with your congratulations and everything, it's not overlooked. We try to respond to all your guys' comments. We're very busy. We all have jobs out of this, except for him. But, and so having your guys' support is incredible. But anyway, off my soapbox now.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I just want to, and we're going to say the name because he was, that was his YouTube profile, right?
I mean, that's
what we said.
Obviously, he doesn't care that his name is public because it's his YouTube profile.
Sure. So we have, I want to just say thank you and congratulations to Alan Buckner. And his comment on the thread was looking forward to seeing more from you guys. So that means don't unsubscribe, Mr. Buckner.
Just
because
you want a game.
But Bob, what are we sending him?
That's a lot of game.
That's a lot of game. We're going to send you. Now, we did open it, and it's punch. It's been put out on the table and everything. But it's an Edge of Darkness. It's complete.
It is.
And we are going to send that to you. So just email us, reach out to us with your shipping information so that we can get this bad boy in the mail to you,
Tim,
as soon as we can.
Let me calculate shipping costs.
Oh, yeah. How much? Yeah, we're going to be prepared for a bill. At least he's using something that could be perceived as a calculator.
Yep. Looks like you're going to owe us free.
Free gratis.
Free gratis.
Yeah. So again, guys, thank you. We're open to suggestions. You got other ideas on like things you'd like to see in the show? I mean, holler at us. Let us know.
And to you, Alan, you can either message our Facebook because we'll get that.
Oh, yeah.
Or all you guys out there too, you can always just email us at boardgamerundown@gmail.com. We have a Gmail, and you guys feel free to send us messages about just your opinions on stuff.
Things you'd like to see.
Yeah. Either one. Join our Facebook group and message us privately there or
I think
email.
I think it'd be fun to see if anybody would be interested in having like a little, like every once in a while we do a thing where we randomly pick somebody that wants to come on the show and do a top five with us.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Like they'll be the Skype in guest.
Yeah, we just Skype you in and be part of the show for, you know, 20, 30 minutes. Yep. And we do like a little top five, just bam, bam, bam. You know, and you pick the list, and we'll all just pick the games. I would say pick Abstract Strategy because that's Dan's favorite.
Yeah. Don't do Celtic Nice dot Nice.
No.
I can't even say
Let's
it anymore.
Move on from that.
Don't do that though.
Right. But thank you guys. Obviously, we're going to continue to try to grow and improve. And we want to do more fun things in the future, but it was really fun to reach this milestone, and I'm really glad we were able to do it.
Yeah.
And again, congratulations, Alan Buckner. You got a beast on your hands
a
here.
Beast.
To
I hope you like it.
And now get the core.
Now hurry up and get that other get on that Kickstarter for the new one for the expansions.
Yep.
So you're good to go. All right, so we're going to get into games we played.
We
then.
Got some games we played this week, guys.
Oh, we played some games
we
this
played
week?
We played some games played this week. I don't know if that games. Surprises you.
Must be nice.
So Spencer's been gone for like 3 years, so he's got a lot of games.
You cannot mention every single game.
Or, oh, I'm going to mention every single game.
Just don't go into detail.
Okay, so Spencer.
Only on a couple of them.
Just fire them off.
First, I played King of Tokyo because I just got the new expansion.
Love it.
The expansion for
like
it.
Like Power Up?
Oh,
yeah,
Power Up, not new expansion.
I played that so many times because we were at a vacation and there were a lot of kids there, and oh my gosh.
Everybody loved it, right?
Not stop playing it.
Power Up is in almost everyone's top three essential expansion list. If you have King of Tokyo totally not Power agree. Up, get it.
Yeah. Then I played Moonrakers. I got to play it. It has actually really good solo mode.
Okay.
And player versus player. I like the game. It's,
right
it's a deck builder, but you're also, you have a ship and you're putting upgrades on it.
Okay.
And in the deck builder, you only have one action and you have to build off those actions with different cards that match up a contract. But you also get these... crew members who add cool abilities and stuff. So it was a pretty solid game.
Yeah. I'm interested in how that plays big solo. You said it plays good because a big part of Moonrakers is when you're going on quests, you can invite other people along on your quest,
you
and then you
along.
Divvy out the rewards. You can say like, hey, you join me and you roll the danger die, but I'll give you this many of the benefit
it's
and
like
stuff
Munchkin.
Like that.
Yeah.
So
well, it doesn't score the same way as it does in the multiplayer.
Sure.
So that's why it That's their way of making it up.
Right on.
We played Cosmic Wimpout. We played Race for the Galaxy Arc number 2.
Okay.
I got to play Retsuko, the work rage balance.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's just it's a card game. It's kind of like a trick taking game, but not quite.
Okay.
Like a poker game.
Sure.
But you have to match better than the other person's hand with the same number of cards.
Sure.
So if I start off the round with only one card, only going to do one card for that round.
Best card wins. Yeah.
Until you get something called a rainbow bomb, and that just messes everything up.
Okay.
Let's see. I also played Monty Python Flux.
Nice.
I've had this game forever.
So really quick, what's the gimmick in that one?
The gimmick is you have to know Monty Python.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, a lot of them have like one weird gimmick in the game.
And then the rules are always
changing. Then the rules.
No, but like one of the rules on there is at the beginning of a turn, if you can sing a song from Monty Python, you get to draw another card.
So literally the gimmick is knowing Monty Python.
Yeah.
Got
and
it.
If you can sing one that hasn't been played before, you get to draw two cards.
Ooh.
Or if you can keep up an accent that's really terrible for the entire round, you get an extra action. Things
challenge
like
accepted.
Absolutely.
Me!
then
also counts as a song.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was at a birthday party with my brother, and he had Gloom.
Oh, right. Yeah. Gloom? I've always wanted to play Gloom.
Cool
I own
game.
Gloom.
Okay, so Gloom is a storytelling game at its core, really. Oh, I love it. Oh,
yeah.
As a writer, that was so fun. Figuring out the character over here, I'm trying to make his characters do well, and he's trying to make them suffer.
Right.
So
every player has a family, and you're trying to kill your own family.
Yes.
But only if they're in, absolutely suffering.
Right. You want them to die when they have as negative victory points as possible.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And of course, I made his guy fall in love with a duck, so yeah.
It's a cool game. I don't get the storytelling element that you do from it, but also I'm just not in that same world
I've
as writers
always
for you.
Heard it described as a storytelling.
That's
game,
so
though.
Weird to me because you're just playing cards and because the storytelling, I guess, is you play, a love card on this person, and then you kind of explain, this person had a good day today, and they came home and fell in love with a duck. So I guess it's storytelling, but it's all just on the players to do that while playing cards. It's not like the cards have a bunch of text on them.
Well, there is a little bit of text, but you're supposed to be working off of the story. So he'll do this thing, and I'll do that, and explain how.
Okay, I've only played it once a long time ago. I just don't remember that.
Make sense.
Have you played Call to Adventure?
No.
Okay.
Actually, I got Catan Starfarers.
Yes.
Oh, that Great I have game. To agree.
So
that
good.
Is a definite upgrade from
Catan.
Oh my gosh,
it's so good.
If you haven't played it, go find a friend who has it because it's expensive.
Or if you trade Catan because almost everyone has and you like it,
you will love
this. It's a price drop, but Starfares of Catan or Catan Starfares, I think is what the newer one is.
It's not a drop.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So good.
The way it
balances is better. I mean, you are dropping a lot of cash on it. That's
it's got these really cool rockets that tell you how far you move.
Yep, your mothership augments all your other ships.
You're adding things to it.
How you can accomplish quests based on the customization of your ship.
The fact there's quests.
It has asymmetric abilities, but you don't just get handed one. Mm-hmm. You have to earn it.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I love the, just on the Starfares real quick, that, you know, because a lot of times in Catan, you, I'm on a 6 and an 8. I should be great. And then no one rolls 6s and 8s. You could be on the best numbers and still never get resources. Yeah. In the Starfares, depending on what how close you are to winning, you start out receiving
a bunch of resources.
Bonus resources. Yeah. Yes, you're always getting something.
It also has a really cool catch-up mechanic built into Starfares.
And you're not going to end up having that situation that's so common in the way most people play Catan, where I have a 6 and 8 and a 6, and I'm just going to be right there.
Oh, yeah.
You can't do that in this game because they're preset.
Yep.
Anyways. Then I played another storytelling game called Untold Adventures Await. Now, this one I say is a storytelling game. I don't mean it's like a game that you tell a story. This is, you are telling a story, and they just kind of wrap a game around it.
Okay.
And actually, I had a blast. Don't go into it with a character you like or you know something about. Because, as a writer, and if you've ever done NaNoWriMo, you don't go into NaNoWriMo with a story you care about, because you will murder that thing. But I went in and I said, okay, we're going to have something like an Indiana Jones adventure. We're going to be two partners. He's going to be the straight guy, and I'm going to be the adventurer. And then as we're going along and telling the story, there are these little chits that you put down and say, this now has to happen. And you're rolling dice. And the picture on the dice, you get to interpret what it means. Mm. So, and then you can move them throughout the story. So those aliens that attacked way back then, they're the reason why this happened.
Chekhov's aliens?
It was quite fun. And it's designed to be done through multiple games. So episode one, and then you can drag things from episode one into episode two.
Oh, nice.
Call that callback.
Yes.
Yeah.
it sounds kind of fiasco-y. But I like the interpreting of the dice element. But I don't know if you know the game Fiasco, but kind of similar. It's just a storytelling game where you're kind of playing a game at the same time, but it's really just everyone gets a role. Everyone's roles are interlinked somehow. Yep. Like, I'm your sister's brother who's married to Bob's character who does this, right?
What does that make us?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then you're just acting is like most of the game and telling a story, you know? And I've always wanted to play Fiasco, but you got
to
have the right group. This sounds similar.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. I played Steampunk Rally Fusion, I played Tidal Blades, and realized I'd been playing it wrong.
Damn, Tim.
Look, I'm not the only one.
Didn't you teach him how to play?
No. Actually, okay. The problem is in the rule book, it says you're going to take the starting challenges, put them aside for now, we'll deal with those later, and then it never deals with them later. And you have to look on the next paragraph in a little chart that says you should have these things.
Right. It never actually says. So it's kind of a figure it out on your own scenario, because I looked over the rule book while I was at Spencer's. And basically what it is it says everyone has their own starting quests. Set those to the side. Then at the end of setup, it says every player should now have these, and it lists the three starting quests under that, meaning you should have your three starting quests.
Yep.
When you have a quest, it's in your hand. You can do it at any time.
Yep.
So that's what that means. Mm-hmm. It's now anytime you can do it. They were thinking you still had to take an action to acquire your starter quest.
Yeah, so
it makes a very tight,
much tighter,
restrictive game even more.
Yeah,
and it really opened the game up having those.
See, I need to play
quests.
It again now with that, because when we played it before, I guess for me, Tidal Blades felt like a lot of work for not
a lot of reward. Yeah.
A lot of reward, so, and that includes setting up the board.
Yeah.
Because the modular game board is not actually modular.
No.
It needs to go in that.
Well, I will say, you said
order.
I want to play
again
with that, but when we played, we always did play correctly with the starting quest.
Did we?
Thing. Yeah. You just start with your quests and you can complete them whenever you want.
Because they have your character's image on them, right? Yeah.
Have your character's image on them, and they're really easy quests, so you can start improving your stats
away. I just need to play it again.
Yeah. Yeah. I still like the game. Sure. I like it. I got to play just one last night. It was great. We
not
lost.
Not last night, but that's
oh,
fine.
Two nights ago.
But
we lost.
How do you
whatever.
Lose at just
well,
one?
We decided. They played the way that I always play, and I don't know if they played it before, but basically it's just full cooperative, just one, and you just... you know, the person gets a card, they say the number, and then if the person guesses it right, you put it face up on the table. If they guess it wrong, you put it face down on the table. And then when you guys call the game, whichever pile has more in it, you want to
lost. Okay.
Sure. That's how we usually do it.
We ended up doing it the recommended number of cards.
Right. It was exactly 13 cards, which is what the rule book says to play with, which is funny because at the beginning of the night, I was like, just rip that rule book up. No one follows the rules. Who cares? And we played my way, and we wound up playing exactly according to the rules.
13 rounds.
And
then
I was like, wow.
And when I looked at the back of the book, and said, how well are you doing? If you had this many, we were like, good try.
Yeah, it's basically like, maybe play again.
maybe just one isn't for this group.
It was funny, though, because when we called it, it was at the end of the round, we called it, and we checked the piles, and it was 6-6. Yeah. It was like, okay, well,
it's
we can't
tie.
End with a tie.
You gotta do one more.
We'll do one more, and that makes it a 13th card, which was the correct amount to play in the game.
And you whiffed on your last card.
Yeah, which was Spencer.
Just yep. just
the
writer.
You're the ones who gave me the clue.
They were your clues.
Finally, we also played Dune Imperium for the first time. I got to play Dune Imperium.
I had to teach three people Dune Imperium. I think I did a pretty good job.
It was awesome.
Since he said he loved it, Jonathan said he wanted to buy it when we were done, and I didn't get much out of.
I think he liked it, but he seemed to like it.
Yeah.
So it came down extremely close to game on the very last round. You're trying to get to 10 points. We were all tied for 8 points.
I have never seen it that close. I don't know about you, but like usually there's one person kind of trailing behind, and then one person jumps ahead and starts the last round, and everyone tries to race up and catch them. We were all at 8 starting the last round, and it was just that push.
Wow.
You know, I've never seen it be that close before.
And even that push, I won, but only because the stars happened to align and everything that happened was perfect for me to win.
Yep.
If any of that didn't happen, Big Dan would have won.
Yep.
And there was no way I could have stopped it.
Yeah.
It was such a close game.
Right
I
on.
Loved it. It was
cool.
Fun. At first, it was frustrating with that mechanic where you can't go where you need to go, but I found out there are ways around it. Not necessarily going there. I need to increase my alliance with the Fremen, and I could never get there.
Sure.
But there are other cards that let you do that without going there.
Right.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's
I like
definitely
it.
What helped you get a victory is
his
deck was so much alliance cards.
Yep.
Like, man, those things, if you can get a lot of alliance cards to constantly go over to those faction tracks, it's really good. I was having a lot of trouble, and Jonathan, too, I think, was having a lot of trouble getting those faction cards. You were buying them up a lot.
I was buying them up.
It was helping.
Cool. And yeah, in the end, I only ended up with one alliance. We all did have
one
alliance.
Yeah, we all ended with one alliance, too.
And it's only
because
they
were
stole
constantly
it.
Being stolen, too.
Oh, wow.
I've never seen them stolen that much. They were like the not the Fremen one, the second one, I think. Right? I think it was the second one up. But anyway.
The Spacing Guild?
It's not Emperor, not Spacing Guild, not Fremen.
Oh, the Bene Gesserit.
So Bene Gesserit, yeah. That one literally, sorry.
Well, that one went through three people.
It literally went to, it was at least three of us, maybe all four of us had that one at one point. I mean, they were traded constantly. And then at the end of the game, each of us had one. I was like, this is amazing. I've never seen this game play so perfectly.
Nice.
So we played one more game, but we'll talk about that one later.
Yep.
Okay.
Sure. What do you got, Bob?
Me? Yeah. I taught a couple people how to play Lords of Vegas.
Oh. Yeah.
They loved it. We had a lot of fun.
They're not Dan.
Yeah.
It's an excellent game.
And, like, trades were made, and, like, we were all betting on our own individual, like, casino. Like, we each had, like, a 9-block casino. Like, they were huge, right? And, like, we're just waiting for that one card to flip. Whoever's card flip gets paid out. Ben ended up winning.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
It was so close. Yeah. But no, it was a lot of fun. You know, plus they got all the cool bits and whatnot.
I have, but have not tried the Up expansion for it yet.
Correct.
Have you tried it yet?
I have that. No, because every time I've been teaching games,
so I leave
those out. Because I haven't done them either.
You think okay.
So
that's my problem with Race for the Galaxy.
Yeah.
It was a teaching game.
Well, that game's always hard. That game, from what I've heard, is kind of hard to teach even base game, just because all the iconography.
Yeah, so
I got to play it
before I can introduce all the other stuff.
After that, we played Garinto.
Oh,
which
nice.
We just recently talked about and did a review for. What would that be, Dan, if we did a review for
I think
for
it
that?
Would be right about there.
Oh, yep, okay. And they loved it. Like, you know, first they're like, Brandon was like, and then we started playing. He's like, okay, that was a lot of fun.
Literally everyone has been like that so far. So if you are looking at Garinto
like,
and you're like,
get it, you'll like it.
I was like that. Tim was like that. Yeah. Bob was like that. And the people he just taught was like that.
Yeah.
So, or were like
that.
Insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was great
though. I'm glad that
even Sarah said that looks neat. So I might be able to get her next.
Yeah, that's one that like I know I can take over the in-laws and get played and stuff. Yep. And they're going to have a good time. So.
Yep.
And then I had one more that we'll talk about later.
Sure. Okay. I didn't play a ton, so like a lot of Magic the Gathering, a lot of Ascension, a lot of Star Realms with a couple different people, Troy, Julia, Pat. I got like ongoing games all the time, and I'll save the last one for when we talk to, because you played it too. You got games you played?
So you're talking about the Just Me and You one?
There we go. I got to hit that one. Yeah. I forgot all about that one, and that one was so much fun.
Yeah.
So Dan and I had an opportunity to get on with Alex from Gobico Games, and we played Nersha.
Okay.
On Tabletop Simulator.
Nice.
And we filmed it.
Yep. It'll be up. As a matter of fact, it should already be up. So there you go. That's a full playthrough of Nersha with a kind of interview with Alex. It's more of just talking about gameplay.
It's three full playthroughs.
You're right. We played three rounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Nersha, it was pretty fun. So you got basically, it's you are trying to get your people.
It's an abstract strategy game.
Yep.
So just so that you're in the right genre.
You
liked
it. Yeah, yeah. So you got these tiles, and there's different obstacles or whatever, but more or less, when you move your piece, it's got to move as far as it can until it hits something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That will stop it. The only thing it you can't do is slide it into an opponent's village. Okay. You're trying to get all your pieces all the way across the board to your village, and they are trying to get theirs to their village. So there's you can block movement. There's a lot of strategy. First game, Dan and I, Dan moves, and I just kind of counter move. Then he leaves an opening.
Yep.
He gets sloppy. He falls asleep. I left
the opening on purpose. You're talking about the first score in the first
game. No. I'm just talking about winning.
Oh,
in the first
okay.
game.
Got it.
Yeah, so the first score in the first game, Dan left it. You kind of, somebody has to, like, leave something open.
Well, it gets to the point where you just have to accidentally leave an opening, right? So, because you have to always move a piece that didn't move previously.
Yeah, the awesome thing about it, though, is so I can't just slide my same piece back and forth. When you move a piece, you take what they call the capstone and you put that on the piece you just moved. That piece cannot move. So then next turn, you've got to move a different piece. Then that capstone can come off. Now, if you have no eligible moves, your move is basically pulling your capstone off and not doing anything. But yeah, so Dan leaves an opening. I score. Mm-hmm. Then Dan, like, I play some defense. Then Dan gets, like, two scores real quick.
Yeah.
And then it was, like, move.
Yeah, it was that whole you can't move the same piece twice, and he basically trapped my guy, right? Where there was only one guy I could move, and because of sliding mechanics, right, think that Tim has to score here and my guy's here. Well, if I move that guy, it just keeps going. So it doesn't matter. I can't stop and block Tim, so I just slide that guy past, and he's like, no. And then Tim just goes right in, right?
Yeah, and I had set up so that I could – it wouldn't take a lot of moves for me to get that third piece in relatively quick. Because that was the whole thing, is it was – I didn't want to give Dan a chance to then block me, and now we're going back and forth for that last guy, because I would have to leave myself open, right, to – I would have had to free up that piece that I had trapped. Mm-hmm. And so I was able then to score relatively quickly. Then we played another, a different layout.
Yep. Alex basically just added some portals to the board.
So when you pop into a portal, you can either pop to another portal, or if there's no, if people are sitting on them, then you can stay there. And then when you start your next turn, if there's a portal open, you can move to the other portal, or you could just move off that piece normally.
Right. Which I find funny, because all of the game is perfectly sensible, right? There's valleys, there's trees, or forests, there's mountains, there's lakes, you know, you're sliding around on ice. And then also if you want to use portals.
It's just like, totally natural.
It's just there's like, magic. Oh, okay.
What magic. Do you think Stonehenge is?
Yeah.
And the portals were really cool. Dan smoked me on that map.
Mm-hmm.
Then we decided winner of that got to make a map.
Okay.
Right. So Dan made a map we called Disaster.
Yeah, we called it Disaster. I threw together a map really quick, and Tim said, Dan, this is a disaster. And I said, well, that's the name, so funny that you would say that.
Now, the lakes, this one had lakes in it, and lakes, if you move your piece into a lake, it falls
out of the game.
And it's gone.
Oh, and again, remember, you have to make a move if you can, and you can never move the same piece twice, so you can trap someone where their only move is moving that piece into the lake. Right.
Which I tried really hard to do. Right. I almost got so no pieces actually went
no
into
piece
the lake.
No piece went into the lake. My guy was skirting around that lake the whole time though, and Tim just couldn't catch him.
I couldn't box him in, but I did pull out a victory.
He did. It was a close one. And he got the map I made was accidentally really interesting.
It was really good. It was really
you can't your piece can never so you, the enemy base is behind where you start, right? Mm-hmm. And they have to cross. Your piece can never move towards an enemy base. So if my piece slides forward towards my base but is blocked, I can't it can never move backwards unless there's something behind him to stop, right? So in my map though, I just kind of accidentally threw this together, but I had some forest kind of symmetrically laid out.
So forest stop your movement.
Forest stop your movement. You hit it kind of like a portal.
Sure. But you land in it.
But the forests were in front of the bases, meaning all of a sudden you can move backwards now this game because your piece will hit the forest and stop before hitting the base. And it completely changed the game. Like it was really interesting
Required
to see how that happened.
A whole different set of strategy. Yeah. And it was really... Nice. It's really neat. Nersha's really cool.
The customizability sounds really nice.
So NERSHA, Nersha. Yep. It's on Kickstarter now.
Yep. I'll have some more information when we get to the Kickstarter segment.
Yeah.
Cool.
But we played a learning game. We played three matches in probably, 45 minutes?
Yeah.
And that was with BSing with Alex, the whole time.
Nice.
Like, this would be a game where, we're just waiting for people to show up, mm-hmm. and you could play.
And the whole point of the game is it's a tile-based game, so you build whatever crazy maps you want. All the games we played were with 5 pieces on each team, mm-hmm. but the game comes with 12 for each team, so you can add more player pieces if you want. So it's currently a 1v1, but the whole point of the game is do whatever you want. So just build this big map with a bunch of pieces and do 2v2. Who cares?
Yeah.
Right? The whole point of the game is just build crazy maps and have fun, and I think it has a lot of potential. Yeah, I wasn't sure going into it again. Everyone knows. Even Alex was laughing about this because it's abstract strategy. I'm I'm sorry, guys. I don't want to hate on your game. Uh-huh. And then we played it. And when he first talked about it, I loved the inertia idea. And your pieces are sliding and you just can't control them. Mm-hmm. And actually playing it played so well. And again, if it was just a set map and that sliding mechanic, I think it was okay. But the fact that it's a fully customizable, do whatever you want board...
It blows it up.
It has such potential. I had a great time.
Yeah, it's really good.
That was awesome.
Yep.
So yeah.
And then we had one more game to talk
about.
Yeah,
we all just
did you have any other than that?
No, those were my two. Dune Imperium and whatever.
Just one.
So we all got to play Quests and Cannons.
Quests and Cannons.
Is it Short Hop Game?
Yep.
Short Hop Games. So yeah, it's a prototype that's been making the rounds. We were lucky enough to get our hands on it and play it. It is basically a pick up and deliver
at heart,
where you can do a little bit of combat. It's not quite 4X.
I think you could potentially do a lot of combat.
Yeah. Oh, you could do a ton of combat.
It's just
if you,
combat. If you do a lot of combat, it's going to slow down everything else. So you kind of got to kind of go for a combat build, get quest cards that help with that.
Or
use
one of the asymmetrical players that's built for the combat stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of stuff. Because there's definitely a lot of combat in it potentially. But also, like he said in our video of preview for it that's going to be right there, he went the whole game without ever firing a shot. And you can totally do that. So, yeah. Again, the two things is you're either going to be pick up and deliver quests and treasure maps or fighting. The game's called Quests and Cannons for a reason. Right. Pick one and do both.
Yep. But it's, the prototype components, if they're any indicator of what the actual finished game is going to look like. I mean, it's beautiful. There's dual-layer player boards.
Yeah.
Like, your ship boards are fully customizable as you're sliding.
They're shaped like a ship.
It looks like it's laser-cut wood, kind of.
That's probably just
prototype.
Prototype.
But I mean, you put the little flag with your person's character on it.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
And your ships are moving around the map. Again, the map is modular, so the island layout
changes.
You can choose how that goes. Mm-hmm. You can go off of some of the recommendations. Obviously, there's specific ways that they would say, don't have too much of this together or that together.
Yeah. Don't have the entire center of the board just be the Krakens.
or ultimately,
right.
Yeah. But that's super cool.
But it's really fun. The theme is on point. If you're looking for a good piratey,
as long as you're okay, or not even okay with, as long as you don't hate pick up and deliver.
Yeah.
Right. Because that is definitely a lot in this.
But it's a pirate game.
It is.
I mean, you're getting goods and loot and sailing the high seas, right? Yeah.
Plus it's not
customizing your ship,
deliver.
Which is super cool.
No, it's not just.
It's
I just feel like
quest. Go over there, do the thing.
Yeah. Like, oh, hey, sure. These people need this. Go pick some up and bring it to us, and we'll give you points.
Right.
Yeah.
But yes, Quests and Canons, the Risen Islands. It's solid.
Yep.
It's
very
a lot
cool.
of fun.
Very
yeah, cool. fantastic. And again, check out that video that was up there for more details, because we go more in-depth in the preview. But we all do recommend following this one for sure.
Yeah,
yep.
for sure. Ready for news?
Ready for news.
Actually, yeah.
All right. Let's
I got something that might excite Spencer.
And I think I have something to add to the thing that you might have to excite.
You have this?
So,
all right, newsboys.
Well, I'm gonna jump on this one real
quick.
Reiner, our boy Reiner Knizia is back.
Oh man,
in
my
the
boy.
News.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That's not your friend. That's Glenn Drover.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Reiner Knizia terminates more planned releases, not only with Grail Games, but now Madigo, and Colossal.
Oh, wow.
So
these are big companies.
So publishers were making sales in markets that weren't licensed to them, apparently. That's what it sounds like.
Oops.
Where the licensing agreements. So he's terminating like everything with them.
So this is like an even worse version of what CMON's been doing with their giving their stuff to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he probably...
Sell. But now they just don't have the rights to go to those
companies.
I'm
assuming that this means that he had deals with people like for exclusivity
right.
in certain areas. And
you know what? Good for you. I mean, I don't know all the details, Reiner. Maybe you're doing a terrible thing. But from what I've heard, good for you, Reiner, for sticking up for the exclusivity thing. Even though I know that it helps your pocket as well. It's a good moral compass.
I agree.
Thing.
It is.
I agree.
To stand up for the exclusive. That is a hard word.
If what Dan says is right, I agree.
And then, he just had a Kickstarter called Whale Riders that funded in July of 2020. And that... like through Grail Games, and even that will not be published anymore past the Kickstarter.
Wow. Oh, sure.
With that current
company. That's truly limited edition.
Right. I mean, he could take that. He has
IP.
Ownership of the property.
Right.
He could take it over and sell it under a different label. But I would just say, like, hey, guys, make sure you're honoring your contracts, because Knizia is a pretty big name.
Yeah.
You know? So for him to be pulling his stuff. You know, his licenses and everything. It's kind of huge. I'll let somebody else do something before I go into other bits of news.
I got something. The thing that I said might interest Spencer. I mean, it'll interest all of us, but Spencer especially because it's by Tom Lemon.
Oh,
yep.
Yeah.
Who does Race and Roll for the Galaxy.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, he's listening.
Yeah.
So by Rio Grande Games as well, we have a game called Dice Realms that has been announced. Did you guys see this?
Nope.
No.
So this is interesting. This is a pretty, like... not heavy as in complicated, but just like there's a lot of stuff going on here with customizable dice.
Whoa! Right.
Nice. So you're popping off the dice faces
like
and
dice
changing
Forge.
Them? Exactly.
Yeah.
We're seeing another game finally that is doing this thing we've been wanting to see from Dice Forge.
Yep.
And it's even called Dice Realms, so I don't know. But so the realms are your dice. So you are, by popping off the pieces and upgrading them, you are upgrading your realms.
Nice.
Okay.
Right? And then there are things that are going to happen, like seasons that change and stuff, and you want to have your realms survive the winter and stuff. They need to produce enough food, and they need to do stuff like this while you're rolling your realms to do that. Most of the game is simultaneous. You guys are all just reacting to the game, I think. I don't think we're attacking each other. We're all dealing with attacks. And then there are like these, I don't know what they're called, but there's like these event cards that you take, and that shows you the die face you're getting for getting that event, you know, all thematic stuff and everything. And there is the dice are your realms. So depending on how many dice you have, like the more dice, the more realms you have, the more powerful roles and realms you have. But the more you have to feed, because each die needs one grain at the end of each round or whatever, right? And then when winter comes also, remember, that hurts your realms and your crops and everything. So yeah, it's all about the... It all centers around these customized dice and rolling them and upping your realm.
I love the idea of engine building using your dice.
Exactly.
Customizable dice.
Customizable dice.
Yeah. I don't have nice anything else, but I'm just a customizable dice game by the guy who makes Race for the Galaxy, who's very famous for good engine builder.
And Roll for the Galaxy.
And Roll for the Galaxy. He's very famous for good engine builders and convoluted iconography.
Yeah.
Right.
But it makes sense in the end.
Snap. Yeah, exactly. Once you learn it,
it's the point
across. Yeah. Hard to teach, you know, not hard to play. But yeah, that's all I got. Dice Realms, the box art is stunning. It's this giant die, and all the faces have like the 3D realm sticking out of them. It looks so nice.
I had no idea when it comes out or anything like that.
No, I didn't know. I didn't see any of that. It might have said it in
just kind of
like stuff
a generic announcement that
it's
coming.
Exactly.
It's coming.
Yeah.
All right, Spencer, what do you got for news?
Okay, I got two, hopefully.
Hopefully.
I just saw this one on Twitter. It was just a teaser. Who here likes Smartphone Inc.?
Dan, raise your hand.
Well, Arcane Wonders has teased a spinoff game, Mobile Markets.
Nice.
Unfortunately, that's
it.
I know. Okay. They just put a picture up on their Twitter.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm like, a Smartphone Inc. game.
Build the buzz.
Yep, there we go. Start the buzz.
Is it a picture of the box?
I think so.
Does it look like it's as big as this, or does it look like a light game in the same universe?
I couldn't tell.
Okay, just wondering.
It's so good.
It's
a good game.
It's a very well-made game that I don't enjoy playing because I'm terrible at it. I don't think it's a bad game.
When I play this game, I'm like, man, what a good game.
But I am terrible at this game. And it's just, you know, when you're that bad at something, it's not fun. You don't go to the field and play baseball every day when you've never hit a baseball in your life. You're like, no, I'll go play something else. I've never hit a freaking baseball, you know? So that's just how I am with smartphone.
You could learn to hit a baseball.
Is it worth it? There's so many other sports.
Yeah.
Yeah, but usually that hand-eye coordination translates to other sports.
Yeah, that's true.
Most successful athletes.
So being good at smartphone does not go into other games, though.
It just means you're not good at other games also.
Right.
Okay, Spencer, what's your other bit of news?
Okay, my other bit of news. I know we talked about this briefly a couple days ago.
One question, Kane, I was just saying.
Omega Virus.
Yep, you got more?
The Omega Virus remake, I didn't know this, but they also, the company that
the
Restoration Games, has released a, now, I don't know if this is news because it's new to me,
right?
But I haven't seen it anywhere.
He hasn't watched the show, so this might be something previously.
Well, have you guys talked about Omega Virus Prologue?
Yes.
I mentioned it
last week. I didn't bring up to you when I was at your house because I figured if you heard of the one, then you heard of the other. We didn't. There's nothing really to talk about, though, right? It's like
it's
this tile laying game and card laying game.
Yeah, it's the two-player game where you're building the map that you would have for the Omega Virus.
Exactly. We covered it briefly.
Okay, well, that was it.
See
okay, so Grand Gamers Guild is going to be doing a pre-order soon for a new scenario for Endangered.
Nice.
And in theme of Endangered, they're really trying to keep, like, waste to a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
They are also, they've teamed up with the Center for Biological Diversity, so a portion of the proceeds will get,
to them.
Of all sales will go to them. But it is Monarchs, so it's Monarch Butterflies. You're going to get 18 Monarch cards, a scenario card, 15 Butterfly tokens, a generation board, and no box.
Right.
So it's not coming in a box.
Oh, okay.
They just
That'll cut the price.
Yeah, and waste, right?
And because, waste.
Yeah.
I'm more worried about
the box and throw the box away.
I'm going to take all the bits, I'm going to throw it in my Endangered box.
Yeah.
Right.
Huh.
So
that's awesome.
I thought that was cool. I really like that.
Minimalistic packaging. Why waste it?
Yeah.
You ever see the old cheap-ass games? It came in envelopes.
Oh, right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the name.
That's literally the name of a company.
Yeah.
Cheap-ass games.
He's not just swearing because he's psycho.
Did they invent Kill Dr. Lucky?
I think they did.
They made Kill Dr. Lucky.
Yeah. And then a little blurb of news. For those of you that are interested, Pandemic is now available on Board Game Arena.
Oh, yeah.
So Board Game Arena is a nice website. You can play a ton of games for free. There's also like premium options where you can spend some money and do some stuff. They do really nice implementations and conversions of board games there.
One of the nice things with Board Game Arena, correct me if I'm wrong, I've only played one thing on it, I think, but Board Game Arena isn't just like Tabletop Simulator. There's actually programming that goes into
it. Yeah. It keeps you from playing it correctly.
Exactly. So Board Game Arena is actually programmed to help you play the game. You're not just moving everything around.
Nice. I've played a lot of Dice Forge on Board Game Arena, actually.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I played some Race for the Galaxy.
What's the point of playing a game where you can pop off the dice faces?
Well, if I don't have anybody to play with, and I can just play on my phone
But you could just sit there with the
strangers.
Dice and go, pop.
Okay, you could do that. Bobby, you got any news?
I don't.
I got to get past this guy.
Yeah, I'm already over it.
All right. All right, let's get into our
crowdfunding.
Woo! All right. Yeah. Who's going first?
Sure.
Perfect.
Yeah. I just want to mention again because I played it recently and it's a great game. And I look to see how long it's going to be on. It's only going to be on through the end of August, maybe a little bit in September because they're looking for an October ship date.
Woo!
But After the Empire, the deluxe versions on GameFound. If you go to GameFound, they'll have a list of all the games on there right now. After the Empire is on there. If you've got the base edition, you can get the deluxe bits. You can buy a solo add-on. You can buy a full-on deluxe version from them. Trays, you can get minis, you can get cubes. They got a lot of options on there, but go check it out. It's a great game, basically worker placement. You're building your own castle, upgrading it to stone walls, and it's tower defense. It's a ton of fun.
When he's building his own your own castle, he means it. Giant 3D, think like linking logs.
Nice. Big plastic, like, so you start out with like wooden walls, upgrade them to stone, like I was saying, and like your guys are coming in and attacking your siege towers.
It is a great game.
I'm really
looking forward to some of the expansions we came up with, like spies and stuff like that.
Yeah, so hopefully they'll take ideas from us and do some of that. But yeah, so but they did announce that they want to keep it open to the end of August, maybe a little bit into September, but they're going to be shipping things in October because it's already been made, right? The game was already on Kickstarter. Yeah. So it's kind of like late pledging, and you can still get on the bandwagon.
I really, really respect and like how they have run
that campaign. Same.
Really good.
Yep.
I have one, Empire Plateau.
Yeah,
by Francis Games. It runs till September 9th. This one is an abstract two-player game.
I found it a little ugly.
It was interesting, I thought.
I mean, it might be a great game. Yeah. It's just not for me.
It was either art-wise. Two or four players.
Okay.
So you can't do three. But yeah, it's like chess, so there's no dice, there's no luck. It's all just skill. It's a large round map with these nodes around it, and you have six moves. And the idea is to land on your enemy's base to win.
It's the round map too is like a top down of Earth.
Yeah.
And it looks like just from the picture, I don't know, but it looks like the spaces you're moving on or the lines you're moving on is like the longitude latitude lines.
Yes.
That's what's separating the board.
Okay.
And then you're moving around in this abstract strategy game.
Yeah, pretty much. And price point, $52 if you want the actual game. If you want to get some coasters or something, you can look for those up.
Sure.
Yeah. Look for those.
Right on. Cool. Dan.
Mine's Nersha.
Nersha, cool. I'll go into mine. Mine's the big boy on the block for right now until Simon does theirs. but Archon Games has on GameFound right now Masters of the Universe, Fields of Eternia. Now, I'm a child of the 80s. I mean, He-Man was a big part of my childhood. Mm-hmm. I had a ton of the toys. I had Eternia, like the whole thing I got for Christmas one year. But this is basically like a dude's on a map, except you're playing... it can play 1 to 6 players, and you're playing basically good guys versus bad guys. So if you're playing with more than 2 players, it's going to be teams.
Okay.
So you're going to pick characters from your faction, right? Good guys or bad guys. You're going to run multiple characters. You're running around. You're recruiting soldiers. You're, like, building vehicles, I guess. And you're trying to take over Eternia,
You don't
right?
build vehicles. You just turn your cat into a mount, and you ride it into battle.
I want to play as Lionel.
I want to say, from initial looks, I didn't notice. I'm a little disappointed. No Orko.
Yeah, but it does have Mechanek.
Sure.
And Fisto and Faker and Buzzoff and Whiplash and Manny Face.
I was always a Thundercats guy.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought you said that on purpose.
No, I did, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Wasn't She-Ra in Eternia?
Oh, yeah. No, she's one of the main characters.
She's one of the main characters.
Yeah. Awesome. No.
The only thing I know about He-Man is that, like,
is this old school She-Ra or is this Netflix
meme
She-Ra
thing?
I don't really know what Netflix She-Ra is, so I'm gonna just say old school She-Ra.
Okay, probably.
Because this looks like old school.
Yeah.
He-Man stuff. Helmet and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyways, for Jason, our friend at the Board Game Mechanics, he's gonna be into this.
Lots of tracks.
Tons of minis.
Oh, that's what I meant.
And the base game is like 99 euros, and the collector's pledge, which is everything, which is a couple of expansions, blah blah blah, is 179 euros.
That actually doesn't seem that bad because I'm all giddy about getting Iridia, which is 160 for the base.
Right.
Oh my.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, there's a lot of content
this,
and there's a lot of like the artwork and the colors are very vibrant. The artwork looks really good. I mean, the board even looks like it's like the same font and stuff from like the cartoon. So I mean, it all feels on theme. This is gonna be a tough one for me.
Yeah,
because I'm really tempted.
If there's an Orko add-on, I'll pay you the money for the add-on.
Fair enough.
Nice.
Fair enough. But that's mine.
Which actually evens out if we pay him
Yeah, for the other add-on.
Right.
So. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm just going to get – we covered it earlier a bit, but, you know, we might as well mention the Kickstarter info during the Kickstarter segment. So, Furnertia by GoBeGo Games, designed by Dave Ballmer and, you know, the other people, Alex Help and stuff, but it is under Dave Ballmer,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, the Kickstarter finishes August 27th, so if you're interested, make sure to check out that link, watch the playthrough and the interview video, and the Kickstarter link will be in the description as well as a link to the TTS download so that you can play yourself. It is open to the public to play on Tabletop Simulator. But yeah, so that gives it a little under 2 weeks now. Well, by the time this comes out, it'll probably be around, 9 days, something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's a two-player abstract strategy game. For $39, you get the base game. For $59, you get the deluxe edition, which upgrades some of the components, comes with a really big, pretty playmat. You'll see the playmat in the TTS video. We are playing on the playmat. So we're playing on a mat in digital space. Whoa, the future. It ships with 12 maps. Although, again, these are just recommended maps from easy to complex. You can build whatever you want. These are just the recommended, like, these have been tested.
Some ideas,
maps. Yeah. And then I already said this earlier, but the tile types are valley, home, mountains, forests, lakes, and portals. And then they
all naturally occurring things.
All natural every single one. I have ran into every single one in my life. But the only last bit of information, and again, this excites me, and I fully trust it. They are expecting a November ship date for this game. And I fully trust it because Runes of Zun was like the fastest shipping I've ever seen. This company is very good at shipping. And it helps that they make games that are not extremely complex component-wise and stuff, right? They can get that stuff together and get it out. But obviously, there's a little bit more to this than Runes of Zun, a card game. But Runes of Zun came so fast, it came before I knew it was shipping. So I truly believe this November ship date.
The regular truck was faster than the email.
Right, exactly.
That's fast.
They're driving down the road and they see the sparks on the on the
faster,
wire.
Faster, catching up.
No, they're really good. And Alex says this at least once or twice during our playthrough where he's like, they just want to have a game where you can just do what you want with it. Just play.
Right, and GoBeGo also focuses on, by the way, it's GoBeGo. Get it? As in GoBe Company? Because the CO is a different color than the Gobi in there. Yeah. We've been wondering how to pronounce it, but like now that you know the co is separate, it makes sense. But anyway, the GoBeGo is very good at saying people like Magic the Gathering, people like Uno. Uno's too simple. Magic the Gathering is too difficult. Let's make Runes of Zun, right? And then same thing with this. People like chess. People like all these other games. You know, people don't want to invest in chess and they don't want to play these other games. So boom, in the middle, Nersha. Like that's kind of what they focus on. Mm-hmm. And so far, they've done a great job with it. I think that's their model, and they stick to their model.
They're really good. Sweet. No, and they're good people. We've had good experiences with them. So Alex has been really good to us.
Yeah, we had an interview with Alex. Right?
We did. I don't know.
We might be out of snaps.
So there's that, and you know, Dave is super active in emails, and Alex, as you've seen, has come on the show twice, and you know, just chill.
Yeah. Good time.
Yeah.
Good times. All right, guys. So before we get into the interview, just a little bit of housekeeping, I guess. Make sure you check out our friends at the Miniatures Rundown.
Yeah. Sister channel.
You will see Jeff there as well as CJ. Then you will then also check out our buddies over at the Board Game Mechanics because they hate Dan. It's hilarious.
Yep. Something we have in common.
Yeah.
Right. But Jason puts out a ton of YouTube videos like all the time. Yeah. Like the way he cranks them out, I am jealous. And he does a really good job. He covers a lot of games that I've never even heard of.
Yeah.
So he's very prolific. Katie's got some not so boring unboxings. Dan, right? And they also have a weekly podcast, and they foster an amazing
community
of gamers over there on their social networks.
Derivative.
So I would I hope that one day the Rundown page can be as positive and supportive as their
pages. Because currently it's just a negative mess.
I'm the only one that posts on there. And it's just like, be my friend, guys, please. Yep. Somebody
and
talk
block.
To me. Yeah. unsubscribe, unsubscribe. But yeah, now we're going to go into an interview with Cameron Duker from Saving Throw Studios and talking about Redline, the tactical card game.
Yep, let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Hey guys, with us today we have Cameron Duker from Saving Throw Studios, and he's going to talk to us about Redline Tactical Card Combat. He's got an upcoming Kickstarter for an expansion for this. I was an early backer of Redline when we started doing the show, and we were doing research for Kickstarters because that was one of the things we wanted to talk about. This was one that Dan and I kind of got excited about because we, I don't know, like to beat up on each other in games, I guess.
Yeah, it's also a funny, I've told the story before in the past, but one of the first games I ever worked on myself was a very similar idea, not around Ifrits and mechs, but around this type of card system with the how your missions are kind of a terrain kind of mechanic in there and stuff, and like trying to figure that out. And it never really went anywhere because I was working on that when I was like 16, you know, and like just over years kind of working on ideas and stuff, right? But so I saw this and I was like, man, that's like so similar to this thing I was working on. And it was so cool to see someone succeed at something I failed, right? So that's kind of where my attention came from for this.
Right. So obviously, you had a really successful Kickstarter with Redline. And this is your first game, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
A lot of trial by fire, learn as you go, seat of your pants type of thing, which I guess that's how it's supposed to be, right?
Sure.
you know, I like to say that we were like an old school Kickstarter, man. You know, everyone now is so polished. And it's really, you know, it's not what it used to be. So we were kind of, you know, the, like I said, OG Kickstarter, man. We were small, we were scrappy, and it's a great platform to connect with gamers and share your products. And so it did a lot of help for us. It was a lot of fun and a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, so how long did it take you to get Redline? Like, how long were you working on it from when it was just an idea to actually throwing it up on Kickstarter and saying, okay, let's see if this works?
So I'm gonna try and give you the short, complete answer. It actually started back as in 2016. It had this weird idea to make a mobile game. So that's where the lore, the Ifrits, a lot of the art, initial art, came from this kind of mobile game idea. My background, I'm just a history teacher, guys, and single dad. So I don't know why, looking back, I thought I could make a mobile game, but got kind of far. We got an alpha made. You could actually dink around with it. But bridge too far, and that ended up kind of collapsing under its own weight. But we had all this great stuff, right? And I'm like, damn, this sucks. There's, you know, I know sooner or later the stars are will align, and I can do something with it. You know, I'm a big Magic player and stuff like that, and it just – I kind of knew in the back of my head that was probably going to be where we were going to go.
Yeah.
But just when the time was right to get going. So I think just last year during Corona, actually couldn't hang out with my gaming group. I kind of need something to do with all my energy. And so Redline, as it is now, the card game really is a Corona baby.
Nice.
Have a lot of free time, and we just pushed hard to get it made, tested, developed, all that stuff basically during the Corona pandemic. So
that's awesome.
I love
benefit of quarantine.
I love a history teacher obviously casually drops a bridge too far as an expression for overreaching.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I just love it. Thematic. Well,
so that was, you mentioned something, and I know, so Bob hasn't played this yet, but I have a feeling this game will click with Bob for words you just said. Bob and I used to play Magic together.
Yeah.
I mean, also D&D and other role-playing games and stuff too. But when we first started hanging out, it was like, oh, you play role-playing games, and then it's like, oh, you play Magic.
Yeah.
And Bob is like an OG Magic player.
I got all my stuff from the 90s and stuff. Yeah.
Right on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, that's when I started as well. Playing Magic beta.
And we like deck builders, you know, especially where you can really start to customize and like streamline and
your deck.
And so I got to play this with a buddy who incidentally hates deck builders
and just like card dueling games in general.
Yeah.
I dusted him.
He's a miniatures guy.
I felt bad. He is a miniatures guy.
Yeah.
but Dan was watching like a hawk, like over. And
I was kind of rules lawyer being there like, I think you guys are doing that right.
Yeah.
But I have to say though, it's really awesome because you have this universe where there's what in it. Now it makes sense where you've got all this lore that feels lived in. If you know, it feels complete. Like you really do feel like the whole scenario makes sense. And it's not just like a pasted on, oh, this is just you know, well, we like MechWarrior stuff, you know, like we'll just throw that, you know, mm-hmm. on there. And so it's kind of cool to hear that you were working on a completely different project.
And then it morphed
into this because you already had the bones of this story or this world kind mm-hmm. of kind of built around it.
Again, that's maybe like the history teacher in me, and you know, background. I'm kind of like a amateur screenwriter. I don't know. So it's just like just making a game by itself is kind of bland. And you know, growing up, you know, I play Magic now, but obviously big BattleTech guy growing up.
Oh yeah,
just
okay. all the you could tell
source books, the yeah. lore, huge. I mean, that was like my weekends. Me and my buddies just mm-hmm. bashed each other in with our mechs.
Right.
And so you know, like. You know, we want to make our own game, but we want to build around it. So with the lore, and it's just, and that was just something I'd like to do with storytelling. Mm-hmm. And so it's been really cool to build a story with this game, not just with like the history and the background, but telling story on the cards.
Right.
Right. Which is what good card games do with the flavor text, with the art. The characters. So yeah. that was always a goal from day one. This is a foundation that we want to build off of. It doesn't exist in a vacuum. There's history here and
right.
hints of maybe things in the future, but we really wanted to make it, like you said, a kind of a lived in world. So yeah. I'm glad that came across because that was always just a goal from day one.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you were saying with the flavor text, one of the things I always loved with Magic, because when I started playing Magic, I had no idea other than it's just this card game and you're casting spells, blah, blah, blah. And then you start reading and kind of putting together, even just making up your own, I guess, just mm-hmm. from the fragments of the flavor text, you know, your own
story
idea of the stories and mm-hmm. everything. And because your cards, I mean, there's other card games that do it, but mm-hmm. I always appreciate it when you get the flavor text on your cards. And I also appreciate the layout of your cards and the design, the way that it's, I mean, just the way that you've got where different items can be equipped, mm-hmm. The different abilities of the Ifrits, the way they're laid out. I just thought it was really intuitive. Was that hard, or were you just kind of going off of like what's common sense? Or was it hard to balance? I guess
everything was hard. they originally started as just index cards, and I'm drawing layouts right early, and then you go on your paint shop or you know, and I mocked up some examples of what it could be, but then, you know, I'm real limited on artistic ideas, yes, but execution, no. So finding a graphic designer who could really refine it and make it look good. So that was all on him. Like I was like, yes, no, push this, push that. But with the way the cards turned out with the frames and the graphics and all that, really, my graphic designer, a guy named Charlie, did a great job on doing all that stuff. So all kudos to him.
It looks great. Now, is he also the guy who did the art for your cards?
What do you mean by art?
Like the card art, like the illustration.
Oh, no. So Charlie's just graphic design. He did like the counters, the dials.
Oh, right on.
Frame.
Well, he knocked it out of the park. And your artist is great, too, though.
The art team is probably 30 people that I just found randomly on the internet.
Oh, sure.
Being a no name, nobody studio with a no name game, mm-hmm. just reaching out to people. And we put a lot of work into our art. And, you know, the game is fun, but the art is pretty, pretty good. I don't want to brag too much. But I mean, like, we got a mix of professionals, amateurs, students, hobbyists. And so, you know, it's really cool to have a mix of different styles.
Sure. It still feels consistent, though, I feel like.
Exactly. Yeah. And then our Ifrit designer is a guy named Steven Huda, mm-hmm. who actually worked for Iron Wind Metals and Catalyst Games Labs. So, I mean, this is just what he does is he makes minis and models. And so getting him on board, which was a huge get, mm-hmm. Steven's been great. But, you know, he has no problems making these cool looking Ifrits for us. And they look really, you know, that was a big thing too. We wanted our Ifrits to have a little similar design language, because when you make a mech game, there's so many different types of mechs out there, Gundam, and so we really wanted, obviously BattleTech heavy, mm-hmm, right? Because we're fans of that, but we wanted just to have them all, again, look like they live in the same universe,
right.
and really strong designs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm a little bougie with my mats.
Nothing wrong with that. They look great.
We like bougie.
I think my favorite mechanic, I mean, I don't know, right? Off memory, right? I could name a couple things, but one of the things I thought really felt good in how it played and that I didn't recognize from another thing is how the critical hits work in this game, because critical hits, everyone does them, right? And, you know, you can have weak spots, you can have all these different ways to do critical hits, but I really liked how in this one, there is the classic, I believe there's two ways to get critical hits, right? You can either do a natural, kind of like in D&D, like a nat 20 kind of thing, and, you know, classic critical, that's fine. But the thing that I thought was super interesting was you can try to manipulate your dice roll to where your aim perfectly hits their speed. And if your aim matches their speed of their mech directly, that's a crit. And that little mini game of trying to adjust your own aim, because it's almost like this thematic thing of them trying to dodge and you reading their dodge and shooting into their dodge, right?
Yeah.
And I loved that, like seeing that in play and seeing them, you know, because you'll see cards that say you can give a plus or minus one to your aim. And when we were first setting up the game, we were like, well, why would you ever do a minus one to your aim? You want as good a chance to hit as possible. And then it was literally in the middle of a turn when Tim was one above the opponent's speed and he said, I'm going to do a minus one to my aim. And we realized what that mechanic was there for in manipulation. And I think overall that's...
And the beatdown continued.
Yeah, yeah. And that was like the thing that really jumped out at me. Like, oh, that's a really cool mini game you got to play of controlling that and trying to match that speed and paying attention to, you know, obviously knowing your opponents, because the speed is kind of their initiative too, right? Mm. And so knowing their initiative is fine too, but it gives this whole second thing to asking what your opponent's speed is because of trying to play that. Should you describe kind of how you play, right? Because there's two ways to win, right? I off of memory, you either take their arsenal to zero, which is their deck, meaning they've run out of equipment, basically, and they must surrender, right?
You know them out, yeah.
Thematically, right? Or capture, is it three of the five?
No, you have to hold all five.
You have to hold all five. Turn. That's what it is. You have to hold all five of the missions out here for a turn. So I don't know if you want to talk about kind of the basics of gameplay and how you're accomplishing those.
That's a huge part of the game. So the game wouldn't exist without the mission cards you have laid out in front of you, right? And that was the big stumbling block in the beginning. It's like, we want to make a card game. We know we want it mech and sci-fi based, but how can we make it different? Otherwise, it's just like a magic clone. And it's like, what's the point if you just reskin it? And again, growing up, big BattleTech player, and one of my favorite things me and my friends would do is we just, if you ever played BattleTech or something, just getting random maps, throwing them on our pool table so you had different terrain each time and you had to fight on that. How could we get that? Well, wait a minute, it's a card game, dummy, so just make a map out of cards. You have a mission deck, you lay five out, that's where you're fighting at the beginning of each game. The goal is to hold the red line. They kind of have red frames, it makes a red line between players, right? Mm-hmm. And gaining control. And so by gaining control of these missions, you get advantages as well from, you know, taking the red line. You can flank, you can, you know, magic is trench warfare is what I always say. You attack, or a lot of card games, you just go in one direction. Everyone knows, terrible band, by the way. You know where it's going. You know, they're coming straight at you, and there's not much strategy behind who's going and who's staying behind. Red line, though, again, tabletop games, you got maneuvers. So you can send your forces to flank left, to push right, to go up the middle, right? And anticipating combat simultaneous, where is your opponent going to move? Do I want to fight them now, or am I a little weak? Do I want to avoid and stay away? So that opens up a whole different type of gameplay experience. And it all, again, comes from the missions and how they play and the goal of capturing them all. So, yeah, if you capture all five and can hold them, you win the game, right? You've kind of controlled the battlefield. But then, you know, we don't want games to go on forever, so there's attrition as well. You capture missions, it does damage to your deck. There's other ways as well. But, you know, there's a clock, so games don't last forever, just like war. You just can't sit around and camp all day. We want to force players into action. So you've got to go and fight for those missions. Otherwise, if you just sit back, you're going to get overwhelmed pretty quickly and eventually you're just going to run out of resources.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And one of my favorite mechanics, and I thought you were going to mention this, but the critical one is really good. My favorite mechanic is the dials and the assigning the locations to your mechs as you're, you know, secretly, like this is where everybody's going to go. And every once in a while you can, you know, you might have equipment that lets you peek at somebody else's change yours, you know, and all that, that whole dynamic. Like, I just love the cat and mouse aspect of that. And also like just the mind games that can go into that with like, okay, so I'm just going to, and sometimes I would even place it closer to like the side of the line, even though like, so my mech's here.
Mind game.
Even though, even though he's actually going to go all the way over here, but I, you know, I mean, it's all mind games. It's all mind games. You got to use everything you got. You got to use all the weapons in your arsenal.
I just, like that. Everyone knows I'm a huge sucker for theme and trying to cram as much story and thematic elements into a game as you can. And again, that's one of the reasons that I when Tim showed me this, I had my eye on this really hard, is because like in my old crap card game, right, I was a similar mindset of you. How do you get terrain into this game? And like my initial idea was like, so each person would have one terrain card in their deck that was separate, and you would have a terrain line that the players would be constantly shifting back and forth between the terrain they wanted to be fighting in, as in you're pushing each other into, so I'm better in desert, you're better in jungle, so I'm pushing you into the desert and you're pushing me in the jungle, and those two cards just keep swapping, right? And so seeing how this works though with the building the terrain out, and like you're saying, it because it's, and man, again, the theme of, I love the, so there's the baseline where you can send your mechs to protect your base, your arsenal and stuff like that, right? And they can repair and stuff like that. Then you have like your front line where they're ready to fight, and then you send them out to the red line. And I love, so not only is it just an awesome sounding word, I love red line. But then having, like you were saying earlier, the border of the mission cards is a red border, so that when you line them up, there's literally a red line between two players. And I'm just such a sucker for theme. I can't help it. But so I love, and like you were saying, the flanking, trying to make five cards. And some of them swap out, right? Some of them will be out the whole game and you capture them and stuff, but some of them will have like a one-time effect and then gets replaced with a different one and everything. But having this thing that feels like a terrain between the two players, and you are flanking left, and the hidden movement to try to capture, you know, and some places are really hard to capture, so you're going to have to send a bunch of mechs there, and then that opens up other areas that you're just going to have to sacrifice.
There's a choke point where you can only have...
Oh, yeah, and then there's the choke point where you guys just 1v1, you know, try to fight over that and everything. But, yeah, big fan.
The Thermopylae card, yeah.
Yeah. there's basic mana, if you want to call it that, right?
Yeah,
your decks have supply drops that you tap every turn to do things. You have a resource called Reconnaissance. Is that correct? Yeah, you have a secondary resource called Reconnaissance, which are for special trap cards, I would call them, right? But they're like tactic cards that you can play to buff yourself in combat or to do other special effects, and you track your recon, and the more missions you hold, the more areas you hold, the more recon you get per turn, and you can do that. Everyone has a commander, right? What's it called in this one? Sorry, general. This,
general.
Everyone has a general, which you might know as a commander or you know something like that. I can't read. And and your general can either be like face down hiding in the bunker or face up in your HQ, giving you an asymmetric ability that you're using for
your general fight. Can also get attacked, right?
Okay, correct. Your general can get killed, and I think there are ways to revive them. I don't know what the ways are. Again, I was just watching people play. I have not played myself yet.
Straight from Commander Magic, a very popular format, and you know, it was just it made a good fit for the game. So it's, the game has a very strong Magic base, like I said, with the turns and how you drop resources and play and deploy cards. So if you've played any, you know, Magic before, you can pick it up pretty quickly.
Sure.
Combat's an entirely different animal. It's a lot more depth and strategy involved. So, but yeah, if you got a strong Magic background, you can pick this up pretty quickly.
Yeah, and we've got miniatures gaming background between us. So combat also then kind of comes intuitively.
Right.
And the way you've designed it, it all kind of works the way you think it should. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like, oh, well, that's weird. You know, like every time it's like, oh, yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
But speaking of one thing that the Magic community does not have that you do, because I saw you post this morning on the Saving Throw Studios Facebook group, was The people they're making the Legos, the mechs out of the out of the Legos. Yeah, what? so there's people that are like basically posting blueprints for how you can make
it out of Legos.
Yeah, I was reading that this morning while getting ready for the show, and I was like, that's awesome.
That is awesome.
Cuz I didn't get the mechs, like the mech pack, which I thought was really cool. I just couldn't swing it at the time. I was like, that's really cool. Yeah, yeah. But then seeing the just today that so if you're not following them on Facebook, you should go follow them on Facebook just to see the cool
Lego renditions.
You're like, hey, I got Legos. I could do that.
Yeah.
No, it's been real. I'm like, again, you know, we kickstarted last year, and now on our like a 1 year anniversary, we got our expansion coming out very soon, which we'll get to. But like the community, it's small, and you know, we're a small game still, but it's been awesome because there's been people, like I said, there's not just one. This guy's like making every Ifrit into mini Legos, which is awesome to see. One of the backers from the last Kickstarter actually designed his own Ifrit in the game, the Wind Shark. That was his personal design.
Oh wow.
But it started actually as a Lego model that he had built years ago. And now it's in Red Vine lore. It's a racing Ifrit. That's how he made it, right? Like a bootlegging, moonshining kind of racing mech. I was like, what? Serious? I don't know. I was like, well, wait a minute. We can put that in our game. So now, you know, the Wind Shark infers that there's like underground Ifrit racing leagues in our world now. And I love that, bringing the community in.
Yeah. And it's just a whole.
That would be so cool.
It's just a whole other layer in your world, though, right? Yeah. I mean, again, it's it's not all just this heavy combat, you know, us versus them. Like, there's also these subgroups, right? You know, and everything.
But, like, I never would have thought of that if not for, you know, the fans adding to the game. Yeah, one of the the freaks, the Midgeday, we did a series of polls, like 20 different polls last year, and they picked the legs, the cockpit style, the abilities, the armor, the name, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was just the community coming together and making an Ifrit from scratch. A lot of fun. We're going to do it again very soon here, but it's been really cool to see the
the people buying in, right? They're invested,
the creativity, the support. It's been awesome to see.
So you mentioned you've got Siege, right? Redline Siege is coming up.
So like I said, the game was built to be a deck builder. What you have in front of you, our core set, is just to get an introduction to the game. And there's only so much space for putting cards and mechanics. So we cut a lot of stuff out of that core set, things we wanted to do, but we know we just didn't want to, you know, cram it with grams. So we held back, and the idea was if we fund that, we'll, you know, an expansion will be followed up shortly. And so we didn't want to wait. We want to support the game. We sold it as an expandable card game.
Right.
We didn't want our players have to wait another year or two. Oh, by the way. So we made sure as soon as able, hey, the new expansion, it's ready to drop. Yes. And, you know, last Kickstarter, we were still kind of making it. The game was probably 80% done when we Kickstarted last August. Mm-hmm. Right. But I mean, Siege is 100%. So that's all awesome. The art, all the cards, everything is locked in this time. So if we fund, take nothing for granted here, but I mean, the turnaround time is going to be a lot shorter because, again, we're just going to go to printers and have this thing made.
Well, and your turnaround time for Redline was amazing. I couldn't believe for a small independent guy, it kicks out his own game for it to the Kickstarter to have filled within a year, under a year, from when I was like, what? I mean, and that's just a compliment to you and your team and their work ethic and their diligence
and your ducks for staying all in a row.
I was really impressed. And you know, that's one thing. I mean, we've all backed Kickstarters that we've been waiting ages on. And when I backed yours, it's like, when I get Redline, I'll get it, you know, we'll play it, we'll talk about it then. And then but then it's like, you know, oh wait, it's about ready. And it's like, is it really? Is it really though? And then it's like on my doorstep. And it's like, well, crap. I guess it's ready.
Yeah.
I guess it's happening. I didn't realize you had Siege all done. I knew just from reading stuff as you were like kind of putting out the updates and everything, you know, hey, you know, like, oh, they've already got a lot. They were really ready. Mm-hmm. And it, you know. never doubted that you guys were going to keep running with this ball. I just didn't expect it to be so quick. And that's a positive. So what are some of the things that Siege is going to do or add to Redline to expand on it?
Siege is awesome. So again, the game needs card. Like, this game is hungry for cards. You want people to, you know, start to build and make their own decks. And, you know, if you're a Magic player like me, like, just be, you know, the creativity and, you know, this is my deck, you know, ownership. We want ownership. Yeah. That means you've got to be able to build something. So we wanted to give players options right away. So still small. We're not going super big yet, but it's two new decks, two standalone decks, one for each faction, and the Crimson Pact of Mars, United Nations of Earth. So each deck is a full, complete deck, but we want to give players options. So each deck has two new generals inside of it. So you can expand the your deck building opportunities. Each deck plays a same cards, but like I said, the static abilities of your general, you know, that deck can is flexible enough that it goes with each general, right? New mechanics for each faction, new universal things, new mission cards. This is a benefit of the mission deck system. You know, like you're like online shooters, Call of Duty and stuff, you know, they do map packs all the time to keep the game fresh. So that's something we want to do as well. So introducing new missions into your mission deck. So it's just to change up the variety of the terrain and the battlefields you fight on, new possibilities, new strategies to come up with. We got a new line of miniatures coming out as well. Again, you don't need them to play the game. It's cosmetic, but a lot of players like them, and they're top-notch miniatures all the way. Like I said, the guy who makes them for us is professional. And so it's just, again, more opportunities. That's what we really wanted, to give players the tools to start to grow this game now and make their own creations. Give them the tools to play with.
That's awesome. I look forward to seeing more cards for this game, because after playing, that was one of my first thoughts was like, okay, so when you get more cards, like, what are the ways you're going to streamline this and make this, you know, fit your personality or your play style? Right. Yeah. And that's one of the things about, like, any good LCG, TCG, you know, is really just finding that deck that hums for you.
Right.
You know,
plays the way you want to play.
Yeah, because you
matches your play style.
You can make a deck, and I can make a deck. We could swap, and we would not play them the same way.
Correct.
You know, we may
my
not
deck
even
would be much more smooth, whereas yours is clunky and slow. But yeah,
accurate.
Yeah,
but I mean, you could take, you know, I mean, we could take the same decks out of this, and you're going to play that deck differently, and then you're going to customize, even if we're given the same
cards to work from.
You're going to customize yours differently to fit your play style. Yeah. And you know, it's so much fun to try to experiment with the different, you know, just the different types. Like, I'm going to go all fast, you know, or I'm going to just go with all tanks.
Yeah, so you're going to be able to take the new expansion stuff and the old stuff and kind of, like, mix and match and just build your own. Awesome. Yeah.
Universal sign.
Yeah. Yeah. Universal sign. Sign. That's funny, sorry.
I'm not going to make them. Yeah, anyway, but yeah, exactly. You know. Mix mash them together. Like I said, the generals support different play styles. So there's a general who is like a light Ifrit rush down deck, right? If you want to build around lights. There's another one who is about milling. So if you just want to do the war of attrition, right? That's a strength right there. Another one is all about like landmines, which is a new mechanic we were happy to bring back. We kind of wanted to do it in the core set, but pulled back. But kind of booby trapping the missions.
I love it.
To, you know, whittle down your forces and do some incremental damage. So a lot of different options here, and that's been a lot of fun to really finally. It's so constraining when you have what, like 100 cards to try and make a game, and there's so many things you want to do, but having that restraint and be like, you know, be patient. And,
right.
You know, it's coming, but you know, you gotta do it in baby steps.
I like that you use the term milling.
Yeah, that's such a magic
term. Because we know what that means. That's great.
Such a magic term.
Okay, Redline's called raising. But yeah.
So that's awesome. This will come out after Siege launches, because Siege is going to launch, like, when is it launched tomorrow from when we're filming this?
Hey, August 17th Kickstarter. Yeah.
Okay, so two days from filming. Yeah. So this will be out the day after Siege launches.
Okay. So
I'm going to ask you this, and you can answer if you want. So what's your price point for the two new decks? And then, like, what are some of the Kickstarter, like, pledged levels?
So each expansion deck is $18. That's a 64-card deck, two new generals, all new Ifrits, two new mission cards in each one, right, and one that supports each faction, the Crimson Pact of Mars, United Nations of Earth. Besides that, we got a ton of great bonuses. Each expansion deck comes with some promos. Promos are a big part of gaming cards these days.
Yeah, yeah, and Kickstarter, right?
Yeah.
Maybe some companies take it to an extreme. Yes. But so we wanted to have some promos for ours because they're fun and players like them. So again, being the history teacher that I am and wanting to do something unique that hasn't been done because there's so many different types of promo cards. We have World War II posters. So we made some art for our cards that's kind of, you know, plays off or plays homage to some old World War II posters from the day. Nice. It's a good fit thematically. They look really cool. So you can get some special World War II edition cards. We also have our first stretch goal is we just shared this the other day. I don't know if you saw it, Tim. Again, being a 90s gamer kid, you know, Battletech and other things, like just that old kind of like black and white line art that you would see in books is just part of that time period. You know, you didn't have all the digital illustration that we have now. Mm-hmm. And so we have what are called our throwback cards. So six cards, one for each deck, but it's reprints of some new, some old core set and new Siege cards. But they all have that kind of classic 90s, you know, RPG art. And the art is beautiful. It's really good. I don't want to say it's better than some of the old books you may have read as a kid growing up. But, like, we got lucky. And, again, we found a guy on the internet who was kind of doing this as a hobby. And I'm like, oh, man. I need you. I got to get you on here.
Yeah.
So he did 12 illustrations for us, and it's called the Throwback Pack. You'll see it when you go on there.
Nice.
And it looks like it was literally just ripped from a 90s RPG book. Sure. It looks awesome. So good.
That's awesome. So I got to ask, because we talk about Kickstarters a lot, and I always get picky about like the way they do tiers. Mm-hmm. So for somebody like me, who I've already got this, is there like one pledge that I can click that just gives me all the new stuff? And then for somebody like Bob, who hasn't backed this yet, but now might be interested, is there like one pledge he can pick that just gives him everything and
the core game,
OG Redline?
Yeah.
We got a lot of different pledge levels. we got a lot of product. We got two different expansion decks, and we know you got to have the core set to play because you need your dials, your missions, your critical hits. And so you can also order the core set as well. So there's tons of different there's a lot of pledge levels, just because we want to make sure that everybody can we're still early in the game life cycle. We're in our infancy, but you can still get on and not miss anything. So you can get everything. Cool. You can just get one expansion and add on the core set, or get the core set and the expansions. You get all the goodies. It's up to you what you want to get.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I like hearing that.
Yep.
Sometimes I've been a victim of trying to do like a la carte on Kickstarter and not getting everything. Mm-hmm. And it's like, just give me the one thing that I can click that gives me
stuff I need.
Me all my stuff.
Yeah.
And I can just be done with it. You know? So it just makes life so much easier for me as a lazy person.
Right.
To just go, oh yeah. Ding. I got this one. Okay, I got everything I was supposed to get. Perfect. I'm very excited about that. Mm-hmm. So
cool. Yeah, like I said, we put a lot of work into it. It looks great. It really adds to the game. It, you know, the core set was designed with a lot of ideas in mind.
Sure.
I just woke up here. So
that's all
right. it really, you know, the core set plays great. But it sings when you add Siege to it, because that was kind of more our original vision from the start.
Right. Sure.
We had to work our way up to there. Sure. So it's really cool.
That leads me to ask a question. Since Siege is close to your original
I've been waiting,
vision,
man. I was going to ask you, like, what else you got to say?
Oh, well, can we expect more? Do you have more in the works coming
after
new
Siege?
Expansions or
post,
things like that?
Post-Siege.
Postage. I mean, it's been kind of nonstop. So, I mean, last COVID, a year ago, we were building Redline, and then the Kickstarter and marketing was its whole entity. As soon as we funded, getting it made, production, and then designing Siege, like, this has been my life for the better part of like a year and a half now. So it'd be nice maybe to take a little break, but it's fun. I really like doing this. So it's not, I found my niche, maybe, I guess you could say. Sure. Finally. Answer your question. Yes. Yes. We would love to expand. We got ideas for different factions that we want to bring into the game. And that was always from the start, but again, we want to be responsible and work up to that. New Mefreets, new mechanics, lots of, maybe even new formats. A lot of people have been asking for multiplayer.
I was going to ask, will Siege ever
go multiplayer?
Or Redline, will Redline ever go beyond 1v1?
Yeah. Maybe with some kind of like a mercenary faction or something or some kind of corporate faction trying to take over one of the two.
Okay, you just nailed it. There you go. Yeah. So the new factions are going to be mercenary faction and the corporate industrial faction.
Yeah, nailed it. Cool. Yeah. I love the idea.
We want to do multiplayer, and the problem with solo and multiplayer is because this game is built around simultaneous combat,
right?
And mission dials. It's really hard.
Seems one of my most favorite mechanics, by the way. Just that whole hidden movement
I love hidden movement. Out.
Yeah. Oh, totally. But it doesn't lend itself well to be solo people. Play. So that's a hurdle. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. And then another thing is just if you got a 4-player game, just all the different dials, and it can get very complicated. So finding a way to streamline that and still have the game be smooth, because we don't want to get crushed by the burden of its own weight. We have ideas, but again, we've just been so focused here on the base game and the expansion and any other formats. Mm-hmm. Yes, we'd like to. Yes, we have ideas, but are they coming anytime soon? Not yet.
Sure. Now, when is Redline coming to organized play, where you start having tournaments?
You're not the first person to ask. Give us a couple years, and if the demand is there, we'll try. But again, right now that's just so far gone.
Oh yeah. No. It's just, I like the idea that it's really ambitious to create and launch an LCG. And it's very heartening to see that the expansion is like hot on its heels. Like this is almost like if you were playing some other mainstream LCG put out by a big company, it's like, well, yeah, every 3 quarters you might get a new expansion for
a new character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like for you guys to even come remotely close to that, right? I mean, like, because Siege, assuming it funds, flips, it's going to be filled again in under a year, more than likely, if you continue to have your current luck.
Right.
And then it's like, and that's boom. That's
pretty good turnaround.
That is good turnaround for from scratch LCG.
Yeah, it's not like you have like a core material like to start pulling from, right?
Right.
Like some
and
of the
then
big
a whole
ones
team
now.
Of designers and developers.
Yeah, yeah.
Just making stuff.
Army
for
of people
you.
In the background. Yeah. Yeah.
So
there's a lot of CCGs and LCGs that come to Kickstarter too, and they do not all succeed. Yeah. So it's
also
cool
true.
To see.
That's true.
It's cool to see one that succeeded, and that people seem to be really liking. I wanted to jump back really quick. I don't think it would actually work mechanically at all, but I just want to point out how awesome I do think the theme would be for a third faction who is more corporate and doesn't even actually want to fight over the stuff, but wants to control how everyone else is fighting over the stuff.
Oh, like just like distributing like resources to people.
Yeah,
like
totally behind. Like, yeah. Yeah, I don't think that would work mechanically
right,
at all.
Right.
No, theme-wise. They have a different totally separate
WinCon. Yeah, like a separate WinCon. They're just trying to make them run out of cards.
Hey, super easy to design. It's just a whole new mechanic.
Yeah, that's all you gotta do. Go ahead. Go for it.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, easy peasy.
Yeah,
that's all we do is we just throw a whole bunch of nonsense at you.
That's right.
See what sticks.
Yep.
But well, you guys got any other questions? You got other stuff? If we missed anything, I guess
anything
more importantly,
anything
else you want to hit on?
like I said, you know, we talk about the mechanics, what makes the game different, where it came from, you know, the Siege Kickstarter.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, there will obviously be a link in the description to the Kickstarter.
Yep.
Yeah, so if this releases the day after, we're in our first 48 hours still, and our goal really is to try and fund that first 48. Last time, I think we barely squeaked across that finish line the last day.
Yeah.
We're a super small studio. Yeah. Studio is even like being a little gracious with what we really have here.
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. We got a lot of talent on the team, but you know, we all have other day jobs that we do. And
right.
Same father you saw earlier here. So it's just been, it's a lot of work. We've had a lot of fun doing it. We hope the game plays and looks as good as we think. And we like the people are warming, you know, coming around and seeing it. And
you're an established commodity now though. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So this time around, you know, hopefully
that helps a little bit, but again, yeah. It's just Kickstarter is just so nerve wracking.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. It's like, did we do enough? You know, we don't want to keep postponing it. And eventually you just got to draw a line in the sand. Like, here we go. We've done all the work we can do. And let's let the market will decide if it's good enough. But I mean, we hope that, we've proven ourselves with getting a product out on time and following up right away. We try to make it as quality as possible. And again, from day one, we didn't want to look like the amateurs that we are.
we fake it till you make it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. But I mean, you know, it's a lot of talented people working here. We're just want the opportunity to keep working on the game, I guess.
Yeah. Fantastic. Hey.
The only difference between an amateur and a professional is that a professional is an amateur who didn't quit.
Oh, listen.
How deep.
Yeah.
Deep.
From the literary.
There you go, Spencer.
Hey, I'm going to get on my soapbox here, but I mean, look at you guys right here in your studio, right? Yeah. Like, I used to teach entrepreneurship, so it's just kind of like this is another little passion. But if you ever have an idea, something you've always wanted to do, people talk all the time, right? Mm. One day, and this used to be me, like, oh, I got this idea, and you know, talk is cheap. Like, if you want to do something, just do it. Like, if I had any idea what it would take to make, design, test, produce, ship, market a card game, I still would have done it. But I mean, I wouldn't maybe have been so enthusiastic. But you know, there's so much technology out there that really levels the playing field.
Really does.
Like, if you don't have a certain skill like me, graphic design or, you know, making whatever, go find somebody that can do it on the internet. There's tons of talented people out there, right? Who also, you know, have ideas and want to get things done. But, you know, really just, like you said, an amateur is someone who's not, or a professional is an amateur who started or
who didn't quit.
I'm butchering your quote.
Yeah. We do it all the time. It's fine.
Just go out there and work and learn as you go and make those mistakes and get better from them and improve and upgrade. But I mean, you know, I'm getting off my soapbox. Just go do it. Because you can't do it if you put in the work. And it's a lot of work. And that's what turns people off. Yeah. Oh, it's not going to happen overnight.
Right.
Oh, I got to grind. Yeah. Grinding's a big part of it. But grind. And you'll do it.
Yep. Yeah, you're not wrong, man.
Quick question, because a lot of people have been doing this lately. Is there a way for people to try out Redline on Tabletop Simulator or anything like that currently?
No.
Just wondering. It's just popular.
I'm not a fan of Tabletop Simulator. A couple of reasons. I like the player interaction.
Yeah.
My computer doesn't run Tabletop Simulator very well. And again, Redline, just with the dials and the some games translate very well to Tabletop Simulator. Redline is just the simultaneous combat again is kind of, it's hard to translate, I feel, with the dials and stuff like that. So maybe one day people do ask. But again, right now we only have so many hours in a day.
Yeah.
Right.
If we did that, Siege would still be a long ways away. Right. So again, the focus is on paper, and that's what we want to do right now. Yeah. And given the time and resources, we can definitely look into that. But yeah, short answer right now is sorry, no.
So the real question or the real answer is then join the Facebook groups and follow on the social media. Reach out to that community and go, hey, who near me has Redline so I can play it? Because obviously, if they're part of that group, they will want to play it, and they will want to teach somebody else how to play it.
I mean, most games that are on tabletop simulator stuff are made by some random person in the community anyway, and not the game developer. So it could just
ape it anyway. But I mean, you know, of course, that comes with everything you need for two players. So as long as you got a friend and you got a copy, you're good to go. You don't need anything else.
Yep.
So
cool.
Right on, man. Well, hey, thank you very much for coming on. I don't want to. I know you got a ton of stuff going on, so I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I really
appreciate more video editing after this. Yeah,
lucky you. But I really appreciate you taking the time, because I know you got a Kickstarter that is getting ready to go, and hopefully it blows up. Hopefully you're done in 48 hours, you know, get that 48-hour funding goal. Because if everybody that backed Redline the first time and maybe you get a few extra, you should be fine.
Yeah, again, we want to grow off of what we got, but again, it's just so nerve-wracking because you never know how those things work out. But, you know, I want to thank you, Tim, and the guys, because you were early on the bandwagon last year.
Hey, well, thanks for recognizing that. We were.
You were. With shout-outs and stuff, and, you know, that's a big part of the gaming community now is getting those connections and stuff, influencers like yourself. So, you know, I really appreciate taking the time today on my little game. But again, you guys were here from day one.
Well, we have a saying, we're really happy to provide that 6 backer bump.
That's right.
From all of our viewers. Yes,
4 or 5. Let's not.
That's fair.
Let's not self-block. Super appreciative. And, you know, I like to build relationships and keep people close. So let's do it again. This is fun.
And I want to reiterate, anyone still watching, don't forget to check out the link in the description. By the time you see this video, the Kickstarter will be live. So if you've made it this far, definitely click on that link and check it out.
It's
worth a look, for sure. And if you're in Northern Indiana, hit us up and we'll play Redline with you. It's that easy.
That's true. We host actually once a month. We host events where we get people together and play games.
Yep. That's right. So guys, for the Board Game Rundown, thank you for watching. This has been Cameron from Saving Throw Studios, and we've been talking about Redline Tactical Card Combat. See you next time.
Thank you.
That's it. Right on. Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you.
Yes. Really appreciate it, man.
Great talk.
That's fun.
Yep, let's go.
Let's go.
Let's get it. Now we need to leave that awkward pause in.
Thanks for checking out the Board Game Rundown. If you like what you saw, like, comment, and subscribe to our channel. Share our videos on social media and spread the word. We publish new content weekly, including reviews, unboxing, and let's plays. And as always, thanks for watching.